I look for empathy skills. And that is, I think, all too often IT people get so wrapped up in the technology, they forget about the customer or the business partner they're working with. And so I look keenly at whether or not I think the person has the ability to have empathy, because they feel like if you can have empathy, then you can solve problems. And so in all of the questioning I do, I'm looking for their storytelling around, you know, can they connect with the person that I need them to connect with?
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I'm your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we learn from executives and founders who are disrupting and changing industries and companies about what they see differently when it comes to identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, welcome. We are so glad to have you. If you are a longtime listener, thank you for the continued support. I hope everybody can go subscribe on either Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go ahead and give us a great rating. I'm joined today, now I say this all the time, by a great guest, but this one is actually somebody that I consider a close personal friend and somebody that I've learned a lot from. I'm so excited to introduce you all to former Chief Information Officer at Florida Power and Light, Michael Fowler. Michael, how you doing, bud?
I'm awesome. How are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. Michael, every time I talk to you, the first thing I ask you is, what country were you in most recently? So let's do it. What country were you in most recently?
Iraq.
See, that's not a normal answer. I mean, you're one of very few people that I could ask that question to and get that answer. What were you doing in Iraq?
It was all personal. It was vacation, and so that, you know, then I'm going to add on vacation, it raises eyebrows even more.
The funny thing is, it would have made more sense if it was professional. Okay, just before we dive into it, you got to tell me, like, what's something unique about Iraq? Something you learned going there that people who haven't visited might not know.
You know, beyond sort of that's where modern civilization began, you know, in the Mesopotamia, which is the draw, right? The Tigris and Euphrates. What I didn't realize was there was as much water as there is in Iraq. And where the Tigris and Euphrates drain into is a big marsh. And there are people who have for thousands of years have lived in these floating houses in the marshes of Iraq. And so I think one of the coolest days we had was on a boat going through some of what I'm going to call villages within the marshes of Iraq.
That's not something I would have known. That's pretty incredible. Are there, okay, so you said marshes. It's not like ocean front. Like, is it like beach type community? No, I mean, that's probably going a little bit far, right?
Lots of water and lots of grass. Grass probably 5 feet tall and channels that run through them. And so it's the grassy areas where, you know, the houses are built, and then obviously the boats navigate the channels. And so kind of like a grassy Venice.
Wow. I would not have known that. That's amazing. And see, that's the beauty of travel. You expand your mind. You learn things that you didn't know. How long were you there?
We were there 10 days. And I met a startup guy. So 75-year-old man, startup, ecotourism, right? And so he was the one who did all this who did all this navigating through the water for us. Interesting guy. And I never thought about, you know, a 75-year-old Iraqi that lives in the marshes being eco startup guy.
Yeah. Very different than, say, Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Can I just ask, what was the best bite you had, best food you had while you were there?
You know, it's a lot of kebabs. And probably the last day when we were in the north of Iraq called Kurdistan, this restaurant's known for their kebabs. They actually have taken over like half of the market with places to sit down and eat. And so definitely the fresh kebabs.
Okay. Well, this is one of my favorite starts to a podcast. I'm so glad I learned that. Maybe one day I'll be in Iraq and get to see the beautiful marshes and meet the 75-year-old startup. Hey, listen, we just upped the board of tourism in Iraq by 15-20% just by this podcast. So let's get into it. Let's talk a little business. So I said at the beginning, most recently, you were the CIO at FPL. And after many years of building an incredible team there and having a ton of success, you recently retired. And so I'm just interested, like, what led to this decision? Because you've obviously got a lot to offer. You've got a lot of energy. I wouldn't have, like, when you told me, I was shocked that you were retiring. What led to the decision, and was it hard?
It was very hard. So I'm going to leave the very hard part for the second part of this. So what led up to the decision, you know, when you, and I won't say the age, but when you get to an age, you start to think about the things you haven't done. And so we just got finished talking about Iraq. And so yep. I wanted to be able to do those things And, you know, I was a workaholic and I am a workaholic. I don't think it ever leaves you. And so, you know, I had a hard time balancing how to make sure I was giving 110% at work and then still getting in some of the stuff that I wanted to do, like Iraq. I think that ultimately led to, I couldn't do both and give 110%. I found a good point to make the break. And so, I think I left the team in a very good place at FPL. It's an awesome team. And look, they're very customer focused. And so it's a 24/7 job.
Was that something where like there was a moment where you had an inflection point either at work and home, or was it more of like a gradual process where you just kind of came to like, this is what I need to do?
And, you know, I think it was definitely gradual, right? And so you can't do the off the beaten travel that we do in a 2-day weekend. And so I knew that I needed more time. And I knew that that wasn't fair to my team, you know, or to the customers of FPL. And so it was that fine balancing act. And so it definitely came over time. And the hard part was, I think I am young, but I wasn't ready to go. The first 3 months were probably the hardest, but I think I'm beyond that hump now.
Well, so I really love having this conversation because I haven't really had it on this podcast before. So now that you're not in Iraq or places around the world all the time, you're spending a lot of time currently in South Florida in your home, right? So what are you doing to like take up that time? How are you keeping busy? One of the things I always hear about when people retire is like you lose a little bit of purpose in terms of like your professional challenges. And so how are you filling that void outside of the travel?
Yeah. So for me, I've searched for places where I think I can get excited about the work, right? That fits the new schedule. And so whether that's helping Tech Hub South Florida, whether that's helping a company called Culture Partners, where I think they're doing a lot of work to teach companies how to cultivate culture for the greater good of the bottom line. And a lot of that was core to how I think and live and breathe and work. And so helping Culture Partners with their mission, with helping companies that want to refine their culture, I think was right up my alley and sort of fits the new norm for my lifestyle.
Yeah, I really like that. I met you at a South Florida Tech Hub event. They do some wonderful things. I've spoken at some of the events and been at the events, and I really enjoy the team there. So that's awesome. I'm glad you're getting to put some time in that. And I know Culture Partners well too. We both know Colby, great guy. So I'm excited for you. I think there's a lot of the retirement is certainly not an ending point. It's the new beginning. In a lot of ways, you're going to do some of the best travel of your life upcoming, and you've got these professional endeavors that you're continuing to keep sharpened. So you're not out fishing or on a boat. You're doing some different things that are keeping your mind stimulated, but also getting to see the world. So I love that for you. One of the things that I really, really liked about when you left, and you talked about how much the team mattered to you at FPL, right? And you wanted to do right by them as well as the customers. But one of the things you did is you commissioned a book entitled Lessons in Leadership. That was the name of it, right? And your team contributed to that. So I'm just interested, like, what was the intent of it? How did it come out? Were you happy with kind of the end product?
So, and look, I think the book was more about the team and the people. And so what I wanted to do was introduce the team of leaders that I had to the rest of the company. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when you leave an organization is your successor comes in. And he starts to learn about the team that he or she, right? In my case, it was a he that he inherited. And he might not know them. He might have only seen them, you know, walking around the building, but he didn't really know what made them tick. And so the title of the book was Letters from Leaders. Letters. And so what I asked them to do was to write a short letter to future leaders about what advice that they would give the next generation of leaders. Ooh. And my hope in that is it gives a little bit of insight in what each of their superpowers are. And my hope was that it was a gift to him that he really saw a level below really quickly of the people, right, and the team that he was inheriting. Because there's so much power in understanding the superpowers that each of us bring to the table. And I think that we captured the essence of that in each of the letters that they wrote. So
that's fantastic. Was there one, and you don't got to name names, but was there one letter or anything that was especially poignant or something that really stood out to you that you have in your memory?
No, you know, I think a lot of them are going to, you know, said similar things just in a little bit of a different way. And so I don't know that, you know, it's fair to say that one was better than the other. No, okay.
That's fair. Just wanted to ask. I love that. I think that's, it's a sign of the type of leader you are, putting the time into something like that, working with your team on that. And I totally agree with you. When there's a change in leadership, a lot of times, right? Like, there's that acclimation period. There's that learning period. And anything you can do to speed that up, anything you can do to kind of get somebody and kind of set your people up in a position where they can continue running and excelling rather than going through that kind of that awkward transition phase that can sometimes happen. I think that's a really, really sharp thing.
So, and there, you know, the extroverts will always stand out, right? The extroverts will always, you know, make their mark with a new leader. But some of the people, you know, may sit back a little bit and try to read the, you know, read the tea leaves a little bit. And I think the book is an icebreaker, really.
I love it.
To get beyond that.
And as a deep, deep introvert myself, I'm just so glad that you I can't even get it out of my mouth. I love that. Can I ask you something? You were there for such a long time. You accomplished so much. Is there any specific accomplishment that you're super proud of or anything that like really stands out that you're like really happy about, you know, yourself and obviously the team? We accomplished X.
You know, I'm a tech guy at heart, right? And so what makes me tick is all the new tech. And so, and tech always needs to be refreshed. And in many cases, you know, tech can get old and sometimes people don't want to invest in the new tech. And so I think what I'm most proud of is that we got them in many cases on new contemporary platforms that will allow them to go even faster than what they have in the past. And it's a great time because the world's moving fast and the expectations are that you're delivering value to customers really fast. And I think these new platforms will allow them to go, you know, an order of magnitude faster and easier, quite frankly.
Love that.
We were in the process of retiring some COBOL code that was more than 30 years old. And, you know, COBOL is a great program, but it doesn't move very fast.
No, COBOL predates my getting into the professional workforce. So yes. Been around a little while.
We need to retire it.
And listen, I just got to give some context for people who don't know, who might be our national listeners or international listeners. FPL is Florida Power and Light. It is the big electricity energy company here in Florida. It's pretty much the only standard that we have in place here. And then it's under the Next Era umbrella, which is a bigger, larger conglomerate. So it is like when we talk about scale, when we talk about enterprise, when we talk about like the size and again, scale of the things that you have to work on from a technology perspective, it's just humongous. Is it the largest employer in Florida, I believe?
It has to be pretty close. I mean, maybe the higher ed and maybe some of the other, but it has to be one of the top for sure. Yeah. You know, and their service territory is all of South Florida, all up and down the East Coast, a little bit the West Coast and the panhandle of Florida. So it's the biggest by far, utility provider in Florida for sure.
And certainly when we break down the pie of my income and where it goes, they certainly have a big part of that as well. So me and all my friends here in Florida. So love it. All right, let's go back to the travel because you love travel and I love that about you. And every time we go out to dinner and we talk, we're talking about the different places you've gone. You've been to more places this year than I've been in my life. I don't even think that's a controversy. Can you tell me, like, was this something that was like in you in your youth and you've just always progressed this way? Or is this something that you picked up a bug later in life? And why is it impactful for you? Like, what does it do for you outside of like these amazing experiences you get?
So the person I'll talk about the most in my life is my grandmother. And so she was a small business owner in the 50s. And so being a woman business owner in the 50s was hard work. And so it always left a big impression on me. And I spent, you know, during elementary school, during the summer, I would spend my summers with her. And so it was at a very, you know, critical time of my life when, you know, I was very impressionable that I would hear these stories about this, you know, woman entrepreneur that everyone in town was afraid of because of, you know, just her ability to run circles around everyone. But she also told me stories about her two around the world trips. And so she actually wrote a journal. And I have one of them from her trip around the world in 1963.
Whoa.
And the coolest thing about that trip that is probably really relevant because we just finished talking about it was in that trip in 1963, she landed as some of the first tourists in Baghdad, Iraq.
Oh, it's all coming full circle.
It is. And so I was able to read her journal, and I've posted some of this on LinkedIn and Facebook, you know, journal excerpts from that trip, and went back to some of the same places that she went to. And the only thing I don't have is I don't have pictures from the trip. And so, you know, I only have the written words. And I wish I would have had a few pictures from that trip. And so I think I got the travel bug at probably 10 years old. And I think I probably got some of my work ethic, you know, listening to her, you know, stories of, you know, how you kick butt and take names.
Love that. I got to tell you, I didn't tell you this, but I saw a picture of you recently that you were so young. And it was almost like, I don't know, what year was it, Michael? Was it like 1980? I think it was on LinkedIn or something. I saw it. It was so young. And yes. It was just obviously you and then so obviously not you. You must have been like 20 years old, 21 years old. What was the context of that picture? I'm going to include it in the show notes so people can see it.
Yeah, that probably was, I was at a company called BGE Home. So similar to FPL. BGE is the local provider in Baltimore, and they have a subsidiary called BGE Home at the time. And we were replacing every one of their systems in 15 to 18 months. And, you know, that's no small task. And I think on that project, I learned the power of platform because we were going from a whole bunch of homegrown applications to Microsoft platforms. And that's part of why it made it easier to get, you know, everything replaced in such a short period of time. But I think the picture was of me and the change management guy, Dan Vanderhaave, probably around a project plan. And I learned so much from Dan and change management, because we think about change management as being, you know, those people that train you how to use the new system. But Dan took it to a whole new level. Like, he would go sit at people's desk and he would be like, how are your kids? How's your husband? How's your wife? How are you feeling today? And I think I learned a little bit about the importance of getting to know people. And if you get to know people, then sometimes the change is easier to implement. And I think what he learned was really learning about what was important to them and then try to get them to understand why it was important for them to learn the new system that we were trying to roll out. And so he was just great.
Big shout out to Dan. We are going to go ahead and we're going to make sure that that picture's in the show notes so people can share that and they can put the comparison next to you. I love that. I want to ask you before we jump into the hiring stuff, I've heard some of your great stories on the trips you've taken, memorable trips. So like, is there any stories that you can share with our guests or our listeners that they can get an idea of like what kind of adventures you have or something very super memorable for you?
Well, usually they entail being off grid. And this story that I'll tell was on grid. So this was from last Christmas. We were in Guinea. So I'll let you look up which part of West Africa Guinea is. And so we landed in Conakry, and we had our first full day tour of the capital, Conakry, and we went to bed. And at midnight, I hear this high-pitched whistle, which, you know, instantly I'm thinking missile, right? And then the next thing I know, the window literally blows in, and some of the ceiling falls on me. And all I'm thinking is, okay, well, I'm a little too far off the beaten path this time. Maybe I shouldn't be here. lo and behold, what happened was there was an oil depot about a half a mile away that blew up. And so that was the explosion. And
so the window, day, like the glass actually blew in and the ceiling came down, like literally?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it literally bent the frame of the window. I couldn't reclose the window. And then I had, you know, the white stuff from the ceiling that was on the bed.
Oh my God. So what happened is like, did you cut your trip short or did you like, was it just
nope.
Keep on going?
They closed the whole city. And so the rest of our tour was not in that city. And so what we had to figure out was to get from where we were to where our tour guide was. And, we commandeered 3 motorcycles. One for each of us and one for our luggage. And we only had to go about 2 miles. Anyway, maybe I'll find that picture for you too.
I'd like to include that as well. So are you going back to Guinea or no?
No, there's no reason to go back to
Guinea. Guinea's a one-time stop. I love
it. Yes, one-time stop.
All right. We're going to talk about something that I know both of us are very passionate about. Throughout your career, probably fair to say that you've hired hundreds, if not close to 1,000 people throughout your career. So I'm really interested in your take on, I mean, you've gone through the reps, you've gone through these different experiences. I'm sure you've had some bad hires, you've had a lot of great hires. Let's go through some of these lessons. So the first thing I'd ask you is, what's the core hiring philosophy for you as you bring somebody onto your team?
I look for, you know, and maybe this sounds trite, I don't know. I look for empathy skills. And that is, I think, all too often IT people get so wrapped up in the technology, they forget about the customer or the business partner they're working with. And so I look pretty cleanly, you know, keenly at whether or not I think the person has the ability to have empathy, because they feel like if you can have empathy, then you can solve problems. And so in all of the questioning I do, I'm looking for their storytelling around, you know, can they connect with the person that I need them to connect with?
I really like that. It is a really good quality. It's an important one. It's one that I realized pretty early on in my career is actually a super impactful one to be a great business leader. And why I say that is, yes, of course, like being able to, you know, engage with your employees and understand their perspective on things is huge. But empathy also translates to your customers. Empathy also translates to your vendors. And empathy also translates to your partners, right? And the more that you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes and understand how they might have received something, what their intent might have been when they said something to you, what they might be motivated by, or they might be having a bad day, or whatever it may be.
Absolutely.
The more you can do these things, the better you can create better communication, better solutions. Like I specifically think about it with my customers a lot. Like, how would I receive this? What would I want to hear in this situation? What's happened when I've been upset at, say, you know, Comcast or, you know, the Hilton or whatever it may be? They're catching strays right now. What did I want to have happen? Right. And so a lot of like what we do, like one of the customer service things that we do at our company, we train is that when we say less is more, LES, right? And what we tell people is listen, empathize, and solution, right? At first, when somebody has a problem, you listen, then you empathize. Hey, I can understand why that would be frustrating. Then you solution. What is the next step? What can we do to make things better, right? Because at the many times, what I find is that, particularly with customers, is that people just want to be heard. Same thing with employees, though. Same thing with vendors. And sometimes like they just want to know that you hear where they're coming from. And if they feel heard, that actually diffuses about 80% of the problem a lot of the time. And then you can start to work together on a solution.
And that listening is listening to hear, not listening to respond. And I think I've heard that a lot lately, because I think in many cases, people are quick to just want to respond rather than just to listen first and truly understand before then they respond. And part of that empathy comes from, and you said it, right? I worked in and around utilities for my whole life, right? There is an end customer, right? And that end customer is expecting their power to be on 24/7, right? And so part of it is the work that comes at you might not come 9 to 5, right? And we know all too well during storm season, right? That work comes 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And so you need people to understand that there's an end customer that's relying on us, right? To get them the ability that when they're turning that light switch on, like the electricity's on.
Yeah, you're right.
I think a lot of that empathy just boils down to, I've been in and around that industry a long time and how important it is for when you flip the switch, you want that electricity to be on.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
What about a memorable interview experience? Maybe you were interviewing somebody or somebody was interviewing you. Anything come to mind when I say that? You don't got to name names.
Yeah, it wasn't names. And so it was, I'll do the setup. So when Agile first started, we were looking for Agile coaches, right? And so no one knew how to do Agile. So we had to hire a few Agile coaches. And so I'm looking for the coach of the coach, right? So it was supposed to be the first hire of the Agile coaches. And what I learned pretty quickly is it was a very eccentric world. And so this woman shows up, and she looked like a stereotypical like Eastern European gypsy, complete with like bells and fringe and all kinds of things. And I was expecting like the candles to pop out of her purse next. And so I learned pretty quickly in that space that what we needed to do was to build our own coaches internally. Because I went through a few of those with agile coaches.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so you actually started building a kind of development center within the organization to develop agile coaches rather than trying to go to the outside world, because you weren't just finding what you needed from a cultural fit, if we put it a nice way.
No, exactly.
Yeah. You know, when you say you want a candidate with all the bells and whistles, I don't know if that's necessarily what you had in mind when you get that.
No, I don't expect people to bring candles and bells to the
That's a unique experience. That's definitely not something I've heard before. What about a favorite question? Do you have a favorite question you like to ask that really gets to the heart of things?
I do have a favorite question, and I actually stole this favorite question from a good friend of mine, and it's very insightful. And he was right on this question. And that is, the question is, you have a time machine, and I'll give it to you. So you're going to have to answer.
Okay. I want you to ask it to me in real time. Let's go. And I'll answer it.
All right. So you have a time machine, and for 24 hours, you can go anywhere you want in the future, backward, forward, anywhere you want. You can't work. What are you going to do, and where are you going to go?
Oh my God. You know, obviously I'm not going to say like I go back like 20 years and tell myself to invest in Google or Microsoft or anything like that. I am going to go to the future, and I'm going to go to a time where my kids have kids and it's Christmas time and we are celebrating all together with a very large extended family. And we are together and enjoying ourselves, because I've always in my head like wanted to have a very big family. And it's not that I'm looking forward to be a grandfather or anything like that, but I just like having a big, warm family environment and spending time together. I'd like to look and see what that feels like. I'd like to see if I have a little gray in my hair. That's probably what I would do. What a sappy thing for me to say. But, you know, you said I couldn't say anything professional or work-wise, so I went right for... You know, I always have this kind of like Norman Rockwell idea in my head of like snow's falling and we're all gathered around a big Christmas tree with the fire going and little kids are playing and dogs are yapping and there's pie in the oven. So I don't know. That's what I would do. I would go look maybe 20 years in the future. What do you think?
Yeah, there is. And you know this all too well. There is no necessarily right or wrong answer to some of these things. Part of it is, and I did it for you, right? I want to catch the person just a little bit off guard.
Yeah, you did that. Correct.
They can't be rehearsed, and you get to see a little bit of the person and what they're thinking. And there's only one hidden thing that I'm not looking for, and that is narcissistic behavior.
Oh boy. I said I wanted to see my gray hair.
No. And what you said was fine, but you know, but it's not the, you know, I'm going to go back to make sure I win the lottery. You know, I'm not looking for that. And so, no, you were fun. And a lot of times the question or the answers resolve around grandparents. And that's a very common, you know, there's a very common way to answer that question is I want to go spend time with my grandparents. And I liked your twist on it. You want to be the grandparent that shows up in the future. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's funny because my mom used to laugh with me. She, you know, I was like the only 12-year-old boy that was like, I want to have so many kids that you can't fit them on a bus. Like, I don't know why I always had this desire to have just a really big family. I have four kids now, so it looks like it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But that is something that, I don't know. So there's something about that matters to me, that means to me. All right, we're throwing it back at you. You got a time machine. Where are you going?
I'm definitely going to the future, and I'm definitely doing more traveling. And so, you know, I think some of these places that we would consider off the beaten path today, I think some of them won't be in the future. And so I'd love to see, and I was, you know, this past summer we were in the capital of Angola, and the capital's name is Luanda. And I was very impressed with just how modern that city felt. And I never really knew much about Luanda or Angola. And so I won't say that I necessarily want to go back to Luanda in the future, but you know, pick your favorite city. And wanting to see what really happens in the future. You know, you could say Singapore, right? Singapore is so forward already today. Where will they be in the future?
Or like a Dubai or a city like that, yeah. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting. What about when you miss? Because I'm sure you've hired people throughout your career that just didn't end up working out. Do you find that there's like a theme and or something you wish you would have done differently when that happens?
I don't know that there is necessarily a theme, but I think what happens is there's something during the interview process that plants something in the back of your mind where you're like, I'm not quite sure. And you second guess or override yourself. And then when it doesn't work out, you're like, you know what? I really did see this. And so I should have listened to myself. And so I think as I got older and more experienced, the more I listened to that, to say, if your gut's telling you, that something might be amiss, then you probably want to do a pass. And really that's good for both you and the candidate, because a bad fit is just bad for everybody all the way around. Nobody wants to go through those, you know?
Yep. 100%. What do you do to kind of create a unique candidate experience? Is there anything that you particularly did in interviews, or do you have like maybe a time that you were interviewing where another company created a unique candidate experience? What does that mean to you? And what's been one that stands out to you in the past?
You know, when I was at FPL I would have done this when I was in Baltimore too, is I try to give them a feel for where they're coming to work. And so I don't always do the interview or didn't do the interview in my office. I would say, hey, let's go do this someplace else. And take them to a different part of campus. You know, sometimes it was the coffee shop. And I think in that moment where you take it out of behind a desk in someone's office, it becomes a more relaxed feeling. And usually the candidates will open up a little bit more. And certainly then giving them the opportunity to ask questions in a two-way dialogue.
Love that. All right, I know you don't want to name names and offend anybody you leave out, but when I ask you about the best hire you ever made, does somebody immediately come to mind?
Oh, yeah, that would be hard. Because they're all going to be watching this and they'll be like, why did you say that person?
All I want to know is, did you know it in the interview? The person that ended up being like the great hire.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And he was not a traditional IT person. And he had spent many years on the business side. And I thought that was so powerful because I didn't need him to be the IT expert. I needed him to help bring people together to solve problems. And all too often, I think in IT, we're looking for the deep skills of the IT person, you know, who can put the rocket on the moon.
Yeah. So to me, this is what this show is all about. I find that when you can see the uncommon, right, when you can see something that others don't, when you can make that translation, when you can take something that are not necessarily seen as the translatable skills, but that really apply and are really going to make sure the person excels and understand that unique potential that maybe other people would have looked over. You know, that's what we look at as a recruiting organization, because that we want our clients to trust us in a way. It's like, well, maybe on paper you're not seeing it, but wow, here's why we think this person's a great fit. Those have been some of the most memorable, impactful hires our company's ever done. First you have to have a lot of trust in that relationship, but two, you also have to train people and have people that know their customers, right? Do that deep listening up front, and then be able to identify the things that they know are truly important. That is one of the more satisfying things that we do at our company at any given time. And so I really respect that in leaders who can do that. It's easy to, you know, I've said this before, it's easy to draft LeBron James number one, right? But when you can identify somebody that maybe wasn't that perfect prospect or didn't have it all on paper or whatever it may be, and they become a success, that's a totally different story.
And I described probably three or four people. So I didn't describe just one person. I actually did that a couple, two or three times.
And every single one of them right now is like, Michael's talking about me. That's unbelievable. Smart guy. I usually ask at this point what you're working on right now that you're really excited about. Is there anything that maybe from a software tech hub, culture partners, or even just kind of like your own self-development that you're working on right now that you're pretty excited about?
You know, I think we touched a little bit on it, you know, the retirement gig, and what it means to be working and be retired, and whether you want to call it a second career or your retirement career. Yeah, I think going through that discovery phase, and as I said, the first 3 months were the hardest, but I think I'm starting to like it now. What I find is that I'm able to work on the things that I love and interact with people that I think are really important. And so, you know, whether it's a one-on-one with someone in a mentoring session, whether it's with a potential client, the ability to have sort of a stress-free conversation about whatever is meaningful to the conversation, whether it's about them, whether it's about me, whether it's about their project, I think is very gratifying for me.
Love that. And listen, like some people have a real hard time with it much longer than 3 months because they just struggle to kind of find that, you know, that purpose, that what makes them tick. So I'm thrilled to hear that for you. And I love that because so much of work is a lot of shit you don't want to do that you got to do. That's part of having a job, right? You can't just have the cake and eat it too. Sometimes you got to do a lot of things you don't want to do. Now you've earned the right to be more selective in the people you spend time with, the activities and challenges you take on. And that's got to be just so rewarding. So I love that for you.
The one thing I probably say at least once a day to someone is do big things.
Do big things. And why do you say that? What's your advice there?
Because I think all too often people hold themselves back from taking a little bit of risk. And, you know, that goes for myself as well. And so I think human nature, we always shy away from risk taking. And so the things that you look back on in life are usually the things that were big. And so I always tell people, I said, do go after some bigger things than what you're going after, because you usually learn a lot in that process. And 9 times out of 10, you're successful at it as well. And if you're not, yeah, you learn and you go after the next big thing.
Love that. All right. Last question before our speed round. What is some advice that you'd give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now? And it can't be do big things.
Yeah. You know, I think some of it is, I probably didn't move around as much as I should have.
Meaning like physically, like move to different locations?
Yep. Moved to different locations and probably between jobs and between companies, right? Mm-hmm. I largely stayed at two companies for most of my career. You know, it was two big, large chunks. And so, and I'm not advocating that you have to change companies, but I think you need to move around a little bit more. And it's the advice I give all the interns and the new people coming in. And it's advice, you know, it's advice I'd give myself is, did I move around enough? To get that experience.
All right, here we go. Lightning round, travel time. Yep. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Most memorable trip you ever took?
Sudan.
Okay. Any reason? Particular reason why?
It was probably the tent experience, and so I'll send you a picture on this one as well. A tent in the middle of the Sahara, which you look like a speck of sand, and
Wow. Talk about roughing it. Best meal you've had on a trip?
On a trip? Probably would have to be in Singapore. You know, they have some amazing food and some amazing restaurants.
Okay. What this is a very naive question. Like, what would be a typical fare in Singapore?
Well, they have, you know, they're known for their pepper crab and some of that, but it's very typical Southeast Asian food.
Pepper crab, it sounds
delicious. And usually, you know, fusion, because it's usually, you know, lots of different cultures.
Okay. Best beach.
Oh, best beach. That's a hard one. I'm going to have to say the Maldives.
Maldives. Okay. Just beautiful water, beautiful sand. Like, why do you say it? Everything?
Yeah. Beautiful water, beautiful beaches, and no, like, deserted, like no one was there. So we were there during COVID, and I think that helped a little bit. So, you know, you'd land on a beach and there'd be no one around, and just the colors were amazing.
I love that. What about most beautiful scenery anywhere that you've been traveling wise?
Most beautiful scenery. You know, I think I have a newfound love for Venice. You know, it is a spectacular place. It's special.
I've heard some mixed reviews though, just because like the water and everything, and it's not like, I don't know. Like I just why Venice? Why does that stand out to you?
You know, it might've been the time of year we weren't there during peak tour season. And, you know, just like everything else, we didn't walk just the places most tourists goes. Mm. We were deep back in some of the alleyways of Venice. And I think, you start to see the beauty of, you know, some of the real neighborhoods.
Ooh, I like that. Coldest you've ever been on a trip?
Coldest? Oh, yeah. It had to have been Duane Arnold, which is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. We have a NextEra runs a nuclear power plant, or did run a nuclear power plant there. And I went to see my team in January. And so here you have the Florida guy showing up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa in January. And it was 19 degrees below zero.
Oh, good Lord. That's cold. What's your favorite airline?
So I got this today. Someone else asked me. Qatar? Yep.
What do they do better?
They're the full package. They know what a customer is. And I think their attention to detail, whether it's the onboard services, whether it's when you land, whether it's in their lounges, you know, it clearly demonstrates they're all about the customer for the entire journey.
Okay. You go to New York a lot. You love the theater. What's your favorite show you've ever seen?
Oh, you know, that's a little bit unfair. And I'm going to be too predictable. And because there's a new movie out on it, I liked Wicked.
I was just going to ask you about Wicked. So I went and saw it with my daughters a couple of weeks ago. What were your thoughts on the movie?
I haven't seen it yet, but okay. We're going soon.
Yeah.
My only regret on that is I wish I could have seen Idina Menzel in the original and Kristen Chenoweth. And so, love seeing both of them no matter what they're doing.
All right. Last thing, best place in New York to go to a restaurant to eat. What's your top place?
Oh, you know, there's so many, but you know, La Bernardin probably is the
good choice.
Is the best
Eric
one.
Eric Repair, right?
What's that?
Eric Repair is the chef.
Yeah.
R-I-P-E-R-T. I am pretty sure about that. He's La Bernardin.
I'm going to give you two more. Aquavit. So a good Scandinavian one. If you like Scandinavian liquor, Aquavit was great. And 11 Madison Park, which went vegan.
I'd been there before I went vegan. I'm a big fan of Danny Mayer and his entire, you know, enlightened hospitality mentality. So I've tried to go to all of his restaurants. Also the founder of Shake Shack. They, like you talked about Qatar Air, they do that very well when it comes to your dining experience. And we've actually modeled a lot of the enlightened hospitality as part of our enlightened customer experience here at MSH. So big fan of that place. Michael, I think people have probably pulled over on the road. They're writing down all these notes on these different restaurants and places they need to visit. I appreciate you coming on, bud. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Great seeing you. All right. Have a great day.
Talk to you later. Bye.